Okay, with that, I'd like to move on to the next topic on the agenda, which is implementation status. And I guess maybe just to set the scene a little bit before I go into the slides that you've been provided in Agenda Paper 2, I guess given that we were told that people needed 3 years to implement the impairment requirements in IFRS 9, which was a very important piece of information in firstly trying to get IFRS 9 published as quickly as possible, but also in setting the effective date, I guess, speaking as one board member, I'm a little bit surprised with the lack of questions that we've received so far on the impairment guidance. I know that in some jurisdictions that's probably partly because of other activities that people have been involved in that have involved the sort of credit people and the other individuals and organisations that would otherwise perhaps be putting their energy into the impairment implementation. So I can understand that. We have tried to encourage people to put forward their questions sooner rather than later, because although we've sort of tentatively said that this group will be up and running up until the mandatory effective date of IFRS 9, I really would expect people to put forward their questions early in the process when they're making their systems changes rather than wait till Q4 of 2017 to ask a question, which then means that they've actually not put the right systems in place. So I'm certainly trying to encourage people to put their questions in sooner rather than later. Having said all of that, if we've done such a good job of drafting IFRS 9 that nobody has any application questions, that's also okay by me. I don't think we need to have questions for the sake of having questions to answer, but it is quite a new model, so I'd be surprised if we've done such a perfect job that that would be the case. So I guess the first point was really just to highlight that to the extent that you're talking to people, if you could encourage them to put their questions in earlier rather than later, I think that will help the group be most effective in assisting people in a good implementation of the impairment requirements in IFRS 9. So now moving to slide 3 of the agenda paper 2 on the implementation status. It's a little bit tricky on the phone, but I wanted to give an opportunity for people on the phone perhaps to give us a sense of where they are either with their own implementation processes for preparers or where the firms generally think their clients are at in terms of their implementation processes with IFRS 9. Not so much the questions coming up, but sort of where things are at, because I think that will be a useful piece of information for this group to think ahead in terms of when it might be most likely that we'll receive the most questions, and therefore, if we're going to set tentative agenda meeting dates, to have an idea of whether they need to be early in 2015 or later in 2015, predominantly in 2015 versus 2016, just so we can do a little bit of forward planning. And given that I've got Bill here in the room with me, I'm going to pick on him first to kick off with, obviously you can only say what you can say in public about your organisations, but to give us a little bit of a sense of where you're at.
Okay, thanks, Sue. I guess what I would say to sort of summarise...
John McDonald.
...has left the conference.
Okay, what I would say to sort of summarise where we're at is we're very much in the analysis and design phase. And when Sue talks about systems changes, yes, those are an important component, but almost one of the more important components at this stage is the model design stage and phase, because that is encouraging us to look at the data that's needed to support lifetime expected loss models, the criteria for moving between the stages, the different sort of segmentation and validations that sort of come off the back of that, how that dovetails into the reporting requirements. And so what we're doing is an element of prototyping by different asset classes across different geographies, using what I would describe as data-rich environments where we can leverage the regulatory reporting frameworks because we already have quite a richness of base data. It's not the same, as we all know and understand, but at least it gives us a good start point. And also what I would describe as sort of data poor, where we don't necessarily have the same sort of history, data history, and the same capabilities and same sort of, let's call it, wider customer information, where we have to sort of make more judgment in terms of our approaches. So I think when we think about timelines and future agendas, certainly one of the questions which I keep receiving back at our shop, and not just at our shop, is the interpretation that people are making sufficient or appropriate? So does it meet does it satisfy both the letter and or the spirit of the standard? And so I definitely think that having some discussion amongst ourselves in terms of topic themes or areas where we all know the challenges, we don't need to be told what those challenges are. But what we could do is set a forward agenda so that the timing is quite important here, because I think most firms that I've spoken to are probably looking to lock down and finalize their, let's call it, design phases in the first half of next year. We know we've got external uncertainties in terms of some of the regulatory guidance, which is ongoing, but we all want to move into that implementation phase in terms of systems and model build development. And so what that suggests to me is that probably this group needs to be a little bit more proactive than has maybe been described thus far, in terms of agreeing between ourselves what we think are the four or five key or initial topic areas to start to focus on, and then maybe use that as a framework to set the forward agenda. I think the other thing I would say about in terms of implementation is twofold. One is funding and budgets and all of those are always going to be a challenge. And so how IFRS 9 integrates with some of the other initiatives which are ongoing, some of the regulatory and disclosure initiatives, is an important thing which we are looking at very much, and I know others are. And then the second one is there aren't that many, let's call it, skilled resources across the piece to tackle all of this. And so you have to plan it quite carefully in order to manage through that process.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
I don't want to give a lecture, but I mean, does that cover?
Okay, just a little bit of conscious of time. So, Jörg Mikkel from Deutsche, that Deutsche Bank, that sounds similar to the timing that I've heard Deutsche Bank discussing. Does that sound right?
Sort of that is perfectly true. I can only echo what Bill already said. We are in activities of revitalization of the IFRS 9 project. We are close to final with the project structure and with the budget request for next year. And given that most of the activities are only funded starting next year, we expect that all involved parties and work streams will be more mobilized next year. And then we will also expect the questions to come.
Okay, thank you. Helen?
Sorry, just before you start, sorry, it's Bill, I do apologize. George, just picking up on what I was saying about themes or topics for the group to discuss, you have some good insight or ideas in terms of the main topic areas?
I think it's a good question. We definitely also have one key item, the definition of the significant deterioration. Secondly, we need to look into the various existing models which are partially used for regulatory purposes, how to best transfer them into the IFRS, to comply with the IFRS 9 requirements, to identify where do we have differences, where do we have material differences, how do we want to deal with that. And then there's this big unknown piece in terms of what happens with the scrap of paper, whether there are additional requirements coming which we need to consider. So this is a certain uncertainty out there which we need to also look at and carefully estimate what this might mean for us.
Okay, thank you.
Karen, you want me to speak quickly about Scrabble?
So yeah, that would be helpful, actually.
So the we really think a lot of the people who are on the group have put input into the Scrabble work, and we heard a consistent message overall, and that was to get the work done quickly and get it out. So I'm pleased to let you know that the Basel Committee agreed yesterday to work towards publishing the consultative paper by the end of January for consultation for a 90-day period. And we're very hopeful that that will give everyone a lot more concrete information about where the Basel guidance wants to end up. So over the next, month or so, we'll be seeking feedback from the ISC and FASB and incorporating their views, and then we'll be releasing that. So I hope that was helpful to everyone in terms of getting that concrete information out there.
Thanks, Karen. I think that's very helpful. Helen?
Hi. So for Canadian banks, or at least the large Canadian banks, I think we're in the stage of, you know, getting our hands around the standard, putting project plans in place. For us, the large Canadian banks all have October 31 year ends. So, you know, our times when we concentrate on the standard may be a little bit off kilter with the banks where they have December 31 year ends, just because of where our quarter ends fall. I would think, the first calendar quarter and second calendar quarter of 2015 is when we will probably start to generate a lot of questions about implementation. We're all just releasing our year end results now. Then, quite frankly, the holiday season hits, and then we're back into our Q1. So, what we do in Canada is all the large Canadian banks get together. So, we have what we call a provisioning working group, and we discuss amongst the banks what are the implementation issues, how are people interpreting things. What are the practical problems we're having? And so I would expect that group will convene in the new year, and that's where I'll be looking to generate questions and submit them through to the group, to the ITG.
Okay, that sounds good. So similar timing. Paul, from a Standard Bank perspective?
From a Standard Bank perspective, it's very much, I think, initiation of a project. The key focuses are interpretation of the standard and implications of that, together with understanding what additional information we need in our systems to actually drive all of the models. And I think that understanding drives budget. So we expect a lot of that, more system work to happen during the course of 2015. And then also just high-level comments in terms of the South African banks. I think we've had very little discussion so far, but we are in setting up some interbank discussion groups, which will start early in the new year.
Okay, so similar. And
Paul, it's Bill here. Can I just sort of tease into something you said there? So the additional data, is that predominantly around the retail asset classes where you're looking to extend information sources beyond the, let's say, the 30 days down or the delinquency measures that are currently used. Is that specifically what you're referring to there?
I think both that and additional sources of forward-looking information that are not currently accessible, but also looking at information that's probably not captured as accurately as we would like. And I think it would be touch on things such as where loans have been modified or restructured and things like that.
Okay, thanks, Paul. I think it just probably helps the IASB staff and board to be a little bit more specific if we can. Yeah.
Tetsuo, can you give us a sense of what's happening in Japan?
Yes, in Japan, situation might be different. And so, because in Japan, IFRS is not mandatory at the moment, but optional. And our bank hasn't decided to change the accounting standard to IFRS yet. And Japanese accounting standard is based on the absolute approach, and IFRS, the relative approach, is quite new and different from Japanese standard now. So we are closely studying what kind of impacts or issues we would have on our business process and financials if we adopted IFRS. So that's the current status for our bank now.
Okay, that makes sense. And Alan,
Using this opportunity as ITG, so I'd like to try to make the practical application to be workable for banks, including Japanese banks.
Okay. Last preparer representative, I think, Alan, can you give us a sense of what's happening in China?
At the moment, in China, we have set up a domestic working group to support IDG members' work in China. And the supporting group will be consist of representatives from commercial banks and the standard setters, the auditors, and the regulatory authorities. And we plan to meet regularly to facilitate and provide inputs. And I think it will help my work in ITG group in future. And as a Chinese bank, for Bank of China, that the whole project is still in the preparation phases. And we have organized the departments involved to try to understand more about the IFRS 9 at the moment, because you know that the standard was like written in English, and the people in China, they have to spend some time to understand more about standards. And I believe we'll be ready to progress further in a short time. Yeah. Thank you, Sue.
Okay, thank you for that. Okay, now I'm going to go through the firms, and I'm just going to go from the top of the list I have here, so no particular order. But Wayne, the first bank I'm aware of, big bank applying IFRS, is in Australia, so I'd be interested to hear what's happening in Australia.
Our major bank's year ends the 30th of September. So I think, like the Canadian experience, everybody's been tied down with their year ends. And we're not, so from an Australian perspective, major banks, I think, are just tied down, and the projects will start after Australia Day. And from the smaller banks, the mutual banks, etc., they're going to be followers. So there is the usual Australian inertia on some of this, would be a bit of a summary. And from a BDO perspective, globally, we're seeing remarkably few questions come through at the moment, which is, again, possibly because people are, as the call's gone, you know, putting projects together and starting thinking about projects. They're not automatically coming to the firms to ask our interpretation or help at the moment.
Okay, that's interesting. It surprises me a little bit with the major banks, given that I thought some of them were applying the standard from the 1st of October.
IFRS 9?
Yes. National Australia Bank announced they were going to be applying it from the 1st of October.
I will go and check with NAB. Okay.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see what they've done to be in that position. Maybe moving on now to Grant Thornton. He's not on the call? Okay. Might have to go. I know John had to go, unfortunately, at 1 o'clock. Hervé from Deloitte?
Yes. From our perspective, at least in France, major banks, and I would say the vast majority of banks, are still in the process of analyzing in depth the new text, and they really need to that's what they told us for the moment. They really need to go further in more practical issues in order to be able to identify what might be the questions that could be raised from that. In fact, my feeling is that at the moment there have been the process of making a kind of theoretical analysis of the IFRS 9, but now they want to confront these first analyses with the practical issues regarding IS, regarding processes, products, and all the things, in order to identify the different possibility that could be used to make it more, let's say, practical for them, and limit the evolution in some way in that dimension. So for the moment, I would not expect a big number of questions to be raised before the second quarter of 2015. But I guess that at that moment, we will have some different issues to deal with.
Okay, thanks. That's interesting. So Q2. All right. George, an EY perspective.
So I think we see... really two groups here. We see a lot of the folks on the phone from an issuer perspective that are all AIRB for credit risk for Basel purposes and being, you know, much more engaged in these in what's been going on. And then there is an enormous gap between that group and everybody else, most of whom haven't read the standard, don't understand the standard, and in some cases when they begin to understand, go through all those stages of grief, you know, including anger and denial. And so I don't think we're going to hear from that second group for quite a long time, and I think there is a distinct possibility that they really don't want to ask questions for fear that they do not like the answer. And so the issue about how much are they applying expected loss concepts already in what they do in IAS 39 because of influences of regulators or because of influences of their boards, I think raises a lot of questions about what they do today versus what they're supposed to do going forward. And so I think that it's going to take a lot longer than even the first two quarters of next year to get that second group engaged. And that would include other entities beyond banks, insurance companies, leasing companies, finance companies that are not regulated. All those kind of entities, I think, are in a totally different world because most of them don't calculate expected loss today for any purpose, capital or otherwise. So that's my view.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me too much, but worries me a little bit, I have to say, because presumably they might be the people who need to do more work to be in a position to implement the standard.
Well, and some of them have said they're also not represented in this group. When they look at this group, it's the only people, I guess, who are supposed to represent them are the audit firms. And you know, they look at the big banks and say, that's not me, and these folks have resources and infrastructure that we will never have. So how are we going to do this? And so I think that's a challenge.
Yes, but that is, as you say, exactly why we've got the audit firms on this group. It's also why we tried to choose a number of banks who have got operations in a variety of jurisdictions, because even though they are part of more sophisticated organisations, they still have pockets of their business where they would have the same challenges of data availability, et cetera, as some of the less sophisticated players. And we actually hoped in selecting the members of the group by having some of those parties talk about how they use their knowledge and then apply it in the context of those more challenging environments, what they've done to address those issues practically. So I'm actually hopeful that we can address those issues in that way, But as you say, the challenge is going to be getting the questions that we need to answer to us if they're not doing it themselves directly. So do you have any suggestions for how we can prompt things to get them focused quicker?
Well, the one question that some of the smaller in Canada, I've been talking to credit unions, which are owned by members and are usually quite small, they asked whether or not they can ask very open-ended questions of the ITG. So, for instance, I think Bill brought up the question about the triggers between stage one and stage two. And people said, well, can I just ask a question? Well, how would you do it for this product or that product? And simply get feedback without saying the answer is X. The answer could be a whole long list of things. Simply give me, are they allowed to send in fishing expedition type questions that are very open-ended, or would you guys consider that inappropriate?
Well, I don't think it was exactly why we set ourselves up, but I think that the reality is that some people might need help with implementation, and it might be in our interest to think about ways to assist them to get good application of the standard. So maybe the best answer to that is, if they feel that they have questions like that that might be pretty basic, if they submit it, even if we were to decide that it wasn't appropriate for this group because it's not really an implementation question, it could be a good example of something where, for instance, we might decide as an organisation that some further educational material or some other such material could be something that could be developed to help them. So I think making us aware of those questions and the fact that, you know, even at basic levels that we might not think there's a problem, that some people are still puzzled, giving us that information enables us to have what we need to then decide how best to help them. So I'd still suggest they put it forward.
Okay, thank you.
So I've got a bit, you know, an overall question. You can see from the revenue group, most of the questions are from the FASB. Have we got a mechanism that truly gets these questions, or you know, the fact that we're asking the questions, does it actually get out into the right areas? And you know, BDO, we represent a lot of those smaller financiers that are in complete denial. I'm not even sure without us going forcing them to ask questions anybody else would be.
Yeah, well, certainly speaking for myself, at every opportunity I have when I'm in public, I'm encouraging people to put questions forward, so we're doing as much as we can. I think maybe the revenue group reflects the fact that the US guidance on revenue was much more detailed than the IFRS guidance, so maybe that's partly the reason for why that's happening on the revenue. It might not be the same case for impairment, but certainly I think that any suggestions any of you have that you want to send to us in terms of how we improve the penetration, if you like, to assist in giving people the support that they might not even realise they need, would be very welcome.
Okay.
Okay, Chris Spall, I haven't forgotten you. KPMG perspective.
Well, I haven't done a formal survey, but the impression I would get is that, you know, for example, what, you know, in terms of what Bill described as the process he has and what we heard about Deutsche, they're probably, apart from maybe National Australia Bank, as you mentioned, they're probably at the leading edge. Yeah, the bigger institutions are starting to do the analysis, starting to think about the questions, and have started to develop plans and timetables, and you know, realise they have a massive challenge in front of them. Probably more debate, I get the impression, currently in London than maybe other centres. And smaller institutions are, you know, less mindful and engaged, probably at the moment. In terms of what I see as big challenges, well, I see there's massive challenges for the banks in terms of the plumbing of data and systems and controls, etc. But conceptually, and in terms of getting to a high quality implementation, I mean, the things that concern me are the notion of triggers and significant deterioration, and also how banks build in sort of forward looking macro information into collective assessments. And I think we should think about, well, how we can be most helpful in that regard. I don't think it will be down to this group. I can just see if somebody put a very open-ended question, they'll probably get a very open-ended answer, a bit like you explained at the beginning, Sue, that the standard obviously allows a number of different possible applications and there's scope for judgment. I think we hopefully would all like to see high quality judgment exercised and good levels of consistency. So maybe if we can, areas where we can think creatively around, is there scope for educational material to be developed? Does it need people to, I guess, present perhaps in more detail how they're interpreting or applying those criteria, so that those particular applications could be discussed, and that might assist in setting some expectations or allowing practitioners to benchmark against what's exposed.
Okay, yeah, I think those are good points. One thing I have seen happening in a number of jurisdictions, and it's interesting, a number of people have mentioned it on this call, is seeing groups of banks in particular working together in particular jurisdictions and sharing ideas, because in particular jurisdictions there must be a lot of commonality in terms of product and information that's available, and that's certainly something I've been encouraging people to do in other jurisdictions as well, where they're struggling a little bit to share ideas. But again, if there's things where it might help for us to get involved in terms of, sort of giving a tick that that sort of approach was what we had in mind, I think that's something we should keep an eye on. I think I've been through everybody in the list other than our observers. Did Karen, Pablo or Ton have anything that you wanted to add in terms of what you've seen or any observations on what's been discussed?
Tom speaking. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, Tom Elson speaking. What I see now was that we had a debate in IOSCO during our Committee 1 meeting in Brussels with the Big Six auditors, where we were informed about what they do to train their staff and to train their clients to be well prepared to implement IFRS 15. And that was one of the things not mentioned in this call.
Okay, so it sounded like most people felt that probably in the first half of next year we would expect to see some questions starting to come through, given where people are at in their design phases, at least in some parts of the world, and for the banks that are further advanced in their processes. So I think my suggestion would be that the staff, given that everybody's very busy who's involved in this group, that maybe we circulate some tentative dates that we could pencil in people's diaries for Q1 and Q2 next year, on the assumption that we get enough questions. We can always cancel it if we don't need it, but then if we do need it, we know we've at least got people's time blocked for that. So I'll leave that with the staff to get in touch with everybody on that.
And so I think that would be extremely helpful, because people can then organise their diaries, etc. But I think if we could be so bold as to maybe put a couple of suggestions for agenda items for the, let's say, the first one or two meetings, which maybe we as a group can sort of think about and come back to you with. I think that might help us to sort of focus on something. I think the other point I would just make, which I apologize for not making it earlier, one of the biggest implementation questions that I get all the time is, so what are the auditors going to look for and be satisfied with? Because we know under IAS 39 they've interpreted and applied what ought to be a fairly objective evidence-based standard in a very different way. And so I think when we look at these things, we have good representation across preparers and auditors, and I think we should take on board the comments which have been made today about it's not just the big banks, it's small operations, but it is the end-to-end process, from the challenges the firms have got in terms of trying to interpret and apply, the challenges that the audit firms will have, the challenge that the stakeholders will have in terms of the regulators and others that will use this information. And so I just think that when we look at this, we need to think holistically rather than from our own shops, if that makes sense.
That that sounds fair. And certainly I think we'd welcome suggestions of questions from you guys to think about populating the agenda. And we will try and share with you, maybe even before we have papers, sort of themes that are coming through so you can start thinking about things ahead of time as well. I think the more time we give people to think through issues, the better the discussion we'll be able to have and the more representative we'll be able to make it. Okay, unless anybody on the phone had anything to add, I think we're exactly finishing on time. Yes, and Bill's just suggested that we share contact details. We'll do that as well to make sure everybody knows how to find one another. And again, thank you very much, everybody, for making yourselves available for this call. I look forward to seeing you in person when we have our first physical meeting.
Just quickly, apologies to end this on such a nerdy note on this one, but we do need your data protection sign-offs before I can start sending out contact details of anybody. So if those of you, I know some of you already have, but those of you who haven't, could you please make sure you send it to us as soon as possible? Thank you.
Okay, and with that, we'll sign off, and thank you again for joining the call. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Okay, have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Has left the conference.
George Proxitis.
Yes.
Has left the conference.
Helen Kellogg.
Pablo Perez.
Paul Fallon.
Wayne.